Good evening, everyone. We are in a series on Sunday nights that Adam started last week on looking at the story of Joseph and taking some lessons away, and particularly letting God be God in certain scenarios. And so last week, Adam talked about ambition, and we're going to continue on with that story. So if you have your Bibles, be turning to Genesis chapter 37. And we'll get there in a little bit. Genesis chapter 37. So yeah, last week Adam talked about our ambitions, and I hope that we all have ambitions. Sometimes maybe we struggle with having ambitions or having goals or wanting to accomplish great things. But hopefully we do. We have something that we're pushing towards. Certainly as Christians, we do. Those dreams, those goals, those aspirations of a better tomorrow, of being better, maybe a better version of ourselves, those are all good things. But especially when those ambitions are aligned with God's will and what God wants for our lives, then our life is really pointed in a good direction. However, just because your ambitions are aligned with God and with His will does not mean that you'll always achieve those goals and those dreams. You'll fail to meet certain goals. You're going to fall short of certain aspirations. And there are going to be some dreams that are going to just be dashed and destroyed. And I'm not even talking about the selfish, evil dreams or the ones that just serve ourselves. I'm talking about good, holy, godly dreams that are dashed and that are seemingly ruined. There's going to be times when those dreams fall apart. And in that moment, what are you going to do? How are you going to respond? And so, like I said, this series has been following the life of Joseph, and we're going to continue on with that. And so let's pick up in Genesis 37 and verse 12. And we're going to go all the way through verse 36. So it's a little bit of a longer reading tonight. But this is really the moment that it all falls apart for Joseph. So pick up with me in verse 12. Now his brothers went to pasture their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And he said to him, "Here I am." So he said to him, "Go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring me word." So he sent him from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a man found him wandering in the fields, and the man asked him, "What are you seeking?" "I'm seeking my brothers," he said. "Tell me, please, where are they pasturing the flock?" And the man said, "They have gone away, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams." But when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, "Let us not take his life." And Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand to restore him to his father." So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore. And they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead, with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh, on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And his brothers listened to him. Then the Midianite traders, side note here, Midianite and Ishmaelite are used interchangeably, it's the same group of people. Then the Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. They took Joseph to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes and returned to his brothers and said, "The boy is gone, and I, where shall I go?" Then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in blood. And they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not." And he identified it and said, "It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol to my son, mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. Joseph's dreams, to say they've been dashed, may be a bit of an understatement when we're at this part in the story. Joseph has been sharing this dream, or these dreams he's had with his family multiple times. And I have to wonder, we talked about that last week, Adam did. I have to wonder that he's sharing the literal dream, what he sees from God. But you have to wonder where his mind goes from there. I mean, he's a younger man. We've, you know, are all either younger people or have been younger people. And you know, like, just think back to maybe that feeling of being younger and your whole world is ahead of you, right? You've got these big dreams. Maybe you do right now. I hope you still do. But when you're younger, it feels like there's so much that's just out there to be grasped and to be accomplished. It's a great feeling. It's a really motivating, powerful feeling. You have to imagine that there's some of that within Joseph himself. And certainly, hopefully, we have felt that before, that, you know, we've had dreams of changing the world and making a lasting impact. And, you know, everything's just right in front of you to seize hold of. And that's got to probably be what Joseph is feeling after having these dreams of everybody bowing down to him and him being in a place of prestige and honor. The problem is that life rarely goes the way we expect it to. And Joseph experiences that in a horrible way. Tragedy strikes, people let us down, unforeseen events get in the way of what we thought was going to happen or what we hoped for. Or in Joseph's case, you get thrown in a pit by your brothers and sold into slavery. Things don't always go the way that we expect. And many of us have probably experienced a dream or two, or maybe all of them, that have been dashed or changed or just destroyed because of experiences that we've gone through. And the story of Joseph is exactly that kind of experience. And what that reveals to us are some realities that we have to grapple with as people who are going to have our dreams changed, dashed, destroyed. But there are some realities, some principles that we get to learn from the story of Joseph that help us grapple with those times. And so go back to the beginning of our passage and look at verse 13 and 14, because verse 13 and 14 reveal to us that everyone gets their dreams dashed, including the faithful. So Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And he said to him, "Here I am." So he said to him, "Go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring me word." So he sent him from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. So in the first part of Genesis 37 that we read last week, you could make the case that Joseph was being a bit of a jerk. We don't know that, but there's potential for it with the way that he said, or the way he shared his dreams with his family. But here in verse 13 and 14, Joseph seems to really be doing a good thing. I mean, Joseph's doing the right thing. He's going to check on the well-being of his brothers at his father's request. That's a good, honorable, holy thing. He's got the best interests of his family in mind. And he's treated horribly for it. Because bad things happen to good people. How many of you have heard of the concept of karma? Anybody heard that word, karma? That word gets thrown around a lot in the States. Karma actually comes from Hinduism. It has to do with the Hindu teaching of samsara and that cycle of reincarnation. And in Hinduism, karma refers to your actions and the consequences of those actions, particularly in the way it affects your next life in the cycle of reincarnation. Now, in Western cultures, such as here in the United States, we have adopted that idea, but we've Americanized it, where it's not so much about reincarnation, but it's about cause and effect here in this life. When we use the word karma, especially good karma, a lot of times what we mean is you do good things happen to you. Or bad karma would be, of course, the opposite. When you do bad things happen to you. But both the Hindu teaching of karma and the Western, I guess, version of karma, both of those are not biblical concepts. You can't find the Bible to teach those things. Because what the Bible makes clear through stories like Joseph is that good and bad things happen to good and bad people. Go to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, and I just want to read three verses, verse 43 through 45. Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." That's not karma. "So that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust." Now, it is true that if you live a godly life, there will be blessings that inherently come from that way of life. And it is also true that if you live a sinful life, there will be disaster that inherently comes from that way of life. That's true. However, both the godly and the sinful will experience success. And both the godly and the sinful will experience blessings. It's also true that both the godly and the sinful will experience failure. And they will both experience disaster and their dreams dashed to pieces. The struggles we face, the ambitions and the desires that we fail to achieve or that are destroyed right in front of us, have nothing to do with our faithfulness or our faithlessness. Bad things happen to us all because we live in a fallen world broken by sin. And when that brokenness hurts us, we have to realize that it is not always because we did something to deserve it. Certainly that happens too. But everyone gets their dreams dashed, the faithful and the sinful. And what we must be careful to do when we find ourselves in a position similar to Joseph is to not blame God. The Bible doesn't ever mention what Joseph was thinking while sitting in the pit. He gets thrown in the pit, and the next time we really hear about him, he gets pulled out of the pit. But there's a lot of time in the pit, and you have to wonder, what's he doing down there? Is he questioning God? Is he blaming God? I don't know. But I do know that we struggle with those things as humans. But it wouldn't shock me if Joseph was thinking through some of those questions. We bind to that lie I talked about of karma, that if we do godly things, we should be rewarded for it by achieving our dreams, by having success all the time. And when that doesn't happen, it's very tempting to blame God for it. But God never said he's going to fulfill all our dreams. He does promise to save us and to take care of his people, but he never promises to block out every kind of struggle and every hardship that we encounter. And we have to understand that, and we have to be okay with that. Our dreams and our ambitions are going to be crushed at times, but when that happens, we have to still be able to say, "Blessed be the name of the Lord." The second thing, go back to Genesis chapter 37. The second thing that the story of Joseph teaches us in terms of our dreams is that God's people can dash your dreams. Look at verse 25 through 28 of Genesis 37. This is right after Joseph's been thrown into the pit. "Then they," that's the brothers, "sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah, there's 11 brothers. Well, actually, that's not true. There's 10 brothers there. Okay, I think it's very interesting it's Judah. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh." And his brother listened to him. Then the Midianite traders passed by. They drew Joseph up, lifted him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, two apiece. They took Joseph to Egypt. So Joseph's brothers should have been the last people to ever hurt him, especially in this way. But instead, they are the ones, his own flesh and blood, that conspire to kill him, change their mind to just hurt him, and then change their mind to then sell him into slavery. But the person whose idea it was to sell Joseph was Judah, the same Judah who was in the lineage of Jesus. The Savior of the world was a descendant of a man who, instead of killing his brother, decided it would be of more gain to himself to just sell him into slavery. A real nice guy. Now, Judah does have some bright moments and some good moments, and so this is certainly a low for Judah. But Judah should have been the epitome of God's faithful people. I mean, the Savior of the world is going to be one of his descendants. But instead, he backstabs and he lies. And unfortunately, God's people still struggle with that today. Just because someone is a Christian does not mean that they're incapable of sin or hurting people. Just because you're a Christian does not mean you can't mess up and or that you can't hurt other people. Christians are still people. We're tempted, we stumble, we sin, and when that happens, we hurt people. And we crush their dreams and their spirits. Sometimes it's actually God's people that hurt us and dash our dreams worse than anybody else. And oftentimes it's because we didn't expect it from them. They're Christians. How could they? But Christians struggle with that too. And that's a reality. And the way we choose to respond to that is vitally important. When God's people hurt you, and they're going to, and they dash your dreams, that does not change who God is. The imperfections of God's people do not take away from the perfection of God. When Christians hurt us, it's easy to project that hurt towards God, to hate him and to leave him, because how could he have done this to us? But when we are hurt, we have to realize that God is still perfect. He is still good, and we still need him. Also, in connection with that, when God's people hurt you and dash your dreams, and they will, that does not change who the church is. The imperfections of God's people do not take away from the perfect plan for God's church. When Christians hurt us, it's also easy to project that on other Christians and the church at large. But the church is still good, even if the Christians in it struggle and mess up and hurt you, even if you hurt them. And we still desperately need the church, especially when our dreams are dashed. And the last thing, dashed dreams are not necessarily dead dreams. Look at the last verse of that passage, verse 36. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. Our dreams and our hopes and ambitions are usually something that are very dear to us. And when those dreams are crushed, it can feel like the world is ending. But dashed dreams are not dead dreams. They do not have to be your final dream. With time and perspective and wise counsel, we can overcome that disappointment. And oftentimes, we can find new dreams and new opportunities in the rubble of our crushed dreams. In this story, not to give you a spoiler, but to kind of The dreams and opportunities, or Joseph finds new dreams and opportunities in spite of what happens, and actually because of what happens. Being betrayed by your brothers and sold into slavery has got to be one of the lowest feelings imaginable. And Joseph, while he's walking or riding to Egypt, probably thinks that everything he's ever hoped for or wanted is gone at that moment. His dreams are destroyed. He is now a slave. Nobody bows to slaves. But Joseph was not just sold to anyone. He was sold to the captain of Pharaoh's guard, to Potiphar. And working for Potiphar actually allowed Joseph to dream again. Joseph may not have realized it at first, but God was using Potiphar as an avenue for helping Joseph accomplish the dreams he actually had in the beginning of the story, before everything went so wrong. There'd be more bumps along the way. There'd actually be more dreams dashed along the way. But all of this was leading to Joseph to become one of the highest officials in all of Egypt, a position where almost everyone would bow down to you, including his family. When your dreams are dashed, do not lose hope. Keep dreaming. Keep pursuing God's will. There's going to be new opportunities. There are going to be new dreams to dream that arise out of the struggles that you may be going through right now or in the future. Dashed dreams are going to lead to discouragement. That's natural. But do not let the discouragement of dashed dreams become your demeanor or the default of your attitude. I'm going to put a picture up here, and I'm curious if anybody knows who this is. Anybody know who this guy is? This is Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite. You either love this movie or you hate this movie. There is no in-between when I talk to you about this movie. This is a really goofy, low-budget movie, but the character of Uncle Rico has basically one plot point in this movie. He was supposed to play in the NFL, but he never got his shot, and he is living with that the rest of his life. You may know people like Uncle Rico that they had a dream, and they didn't accomplish that dream, and they never forgot it. And in fact, it's held them back from pursuing other dreams. The whole movie, he is filming himself throwing football so that he might get his shot. And the dude is like 50 in the movie. I'm sorry, you're not going to play in the NFL at 50 years old, right? Don't be like that, where you're always living in the past and what could have been and the dream that was destroyed or crushed. Don't be the kind of person that dwells on that. When your dreams are destroyed, keep moving on. Keep dreaming, keep hoping, because God's people are people that hope and move forward. Here's a real neat thing about Joseph. Joseph's dreams from the beginning of chapter 37, while it seems at multiple times in his journey that they are destroyed, actually are fulfilled. Not the way he probably thought they would be, and certainly not the way really anybody would have thought they would have been accomplished. But the dream of him being somebody who would make a difference in the world, of one who people would bow down to, it actually does happen. And for us, in the same way, if our dreams are in line with God's will, our dreams will never be totally destroyed. For example, if my dream is for people to come to know Jesus, to become Christians, no matter how much I fail at that, no matter how different the specifics are from the way I imagine them, or no matter how many times I experience disappointment, you know, my dream is going to come true. Because that's a dream that God has already promised will happen. If we dream, we hope, we aspire to accomplish God's will, it's going to happen. And that's an encouraging and comforting thought. Our dreams are going to be dashed at times. They're going to fail. They're going to be crushed. It happens to everybody, the godly and the ungodly. And sometimes it's God's own people that do that to us, that hurt us the most. But if we understand those realities, we can prepare for how to respond. We can't blame God. And we can't let the discouragement become a wedge between us and God and His church. And we can't let that discouragement stop us from dreaming and pursuing God's will. I hope that you're a person who has dreams, who has hopes and ambitions for the future, both personally and for the church. The church needs dreamers. It needs people who are visionary and want to accomplish big things, because we serve a God that accomplishes big things. But in that journey, don't be surprised when things don't go the way that you expect them to, and when there's disappointment, and when people let you down or people hurt you. But in spite of all that, know that God is still good, that God's plans and dreams will still be accomplished, and that if you're a part of that team with God, that those dreams and plans will be accomplished with you as a part of it. And we can take hope and we can take encouragement in that. If you need encouragement or you need the hope of Jesus, we're here for you. If you have any kind of need, please come as we stand and we sing.